This is KCUR 89.3. Elizabeth Schultz is in her 80s and enjoying a second career. As a University of Kansas English professor, she was an expert on Melville's Moby Dick, but over the last two decades, Schultz has used words differently. She recently spoke with KCUR contributor Ann Kniggendorf about her new book of poetry and about finding a different voice.
Toward the end of my teaching career at the University of Kansas, I was invited to a dinner party out in the Kansas countryside. And it was just an exquisitely beautiful June evening. And we were sitting kind of in an arbor with the sun filling the flowers with loveliness. And there were all kinds of bees, butterflies buzzing around the flowers. And we were sitting there talking. And evening fell upon us, and then night came. And the bees sort of turned into stars. I realized I wanted to send a note of thanks to the hostess of this dinner. And I didn't want just to write an ordinary bread and butter thank you note. I suddenly had the idea I wanted to write a poem. So I did. And then I wrote a poem every day that summer.
You've famously studied, written about, and taught Moby Dick. So I'm wondering what came first, your love of watery places or of the book?
Well, it was certainly my love of watery places, because I've had the very good fortune of being able to spend every summer of my life, except those when I was abroad, at an exquisitely beautiful lake in northern Michigan. I'm very definitely a water person, an ocean person, a lake person, as opposed to a mountain person. And people ask me, well, how then did you find yourself in Kansas,
right,
which is looks like dry land? But I think that Kansas has its sea of grasses. And they say that Kansas has always made the best sailors.
Why is that?
Well, I don't know, but I think it is because that what prairies share with oceanic worlds is a horizon. And it is that horizon that I think is always before us when we are sailing the seas as well as walking the prairies.
In your poem titled Pastime, the woman is remembering sitting on a dock painting her nails as a teenager. The girl reaches out and touches the opposite shore, but the current self of the poem says the opposite shore is always out of reach. So I wondered if you can say what the opposite shore is to each of these women.
The opposite shore is the ongoingness of our lives. But when I say that, it suggests all of those things that are ahead, that as we go forward, we really don't know about. That may include death itself, of course, but it may simply be what happens in a relationship. And I do not know how it will unwind, if it will unwind. So the opposite shore really is the future in the broadest possible realm. It involves a future of space, a future of light. And I think all of the poems that reference horizon, and there are many of them, suggest that opposite shore.
I think you said you have a poem picked out that you'd like to share.
I thought I would take you out with the very first poem in the book, which is called The Fluid Line. In Palmyra, they draw a line in the sand, and bombs explode among the columns, restoring them to dust. You hear that the archaeologist's headless body sways from a lamppost. An arch, missing its keystone, frames the desert's dry light. Try to live near water. It will keep you buoyant, said Thoreau. You cannot draw a line in it. Water redefines the shoreline daily. In water, a straight stick becomes a quivering snake. Sand at the bottom of a pond, a lake, a river, embodies the waves' flow. Down through the water, the sun casts a golden net, rippling over the sand, catching nothing.